Yeah! So I'm coming out of step one, and boy, I mean, step one could really be summed up as I'm screwed. I always love it when you go to an open discussion meeting and there's always some new guy there going, I'm so excited. Why? I just did step one. And I'm wondering, what book are they reading? Because there's no good news in step one. If we had a one-step program, the suicide rate in Alcoholics Anonymous would just be huge, wouldn't it? Like, I mean, I'm screwed. There's nothing I can do. I can't drink and I can't not drink. And what's worse, right, really, for me, was step two. Because I'm screwed, and now you guys tell me that the solution, the answer for this is God. Which is not good news, right? I mean, I'm either going to go on to the bitter end, blotting out my intolerable existence with alcohol, or I'm going to find spiritual help. And I want to know more about the blotting out my intolerable existence, right? So I mentioned earlier on, I alluded to the fact that I was born into a Jewish family. I was born in a Jewish home, and that's kind of true. Well, not really. Really, what I was born into is an atheist Jewish home. Now, what that means is that we're Jews, but we know we're wrong. The only people more wrong than us on the entire planet are our crazy Christian neighbors. Now, I just want to point out that some of you laughed at the Jewish joke and you didn't laugh at the Christian joke. And I understand we're in the South, but you still have work to do. Really, what we were is we were three-block Jews. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. In the sect of Judaism that I grew up in, it was a strict sect, and you're not allowed to drive your car from sundown on Friday till sundown on Saturday. During the Shabbat, you cannot drive your car. And over the years, in the small town that I grew up in, the community had moved away from where our temple was. So our temple was 5 miles from the neighborhood that most of us lived in. And every Saturday morning, you would see the what I call the 5 mile Jews. They would get up and put on their fancy clothes and they would walk 5 miles to the temple. They were 5 mile Jews. We would take the bus to around the corner, make ourselves look tired, and walk the last 3 blocks. Because we were 3 block Jews. Is what we were. My mom, there was ritual in our home. There was holidays and there was ritual and there was things that we did to look the part. But there was no real spirit in our home. And that wasn't really my mom's fault. It was the way she was raised and the way that I was raised. It just seemed to be that we did the stuff that made you look like you were participating, but there was no heart in it. My mom would say things to me like, you know, Sheldon, religion is the opium of the masses. It's for fools and children. Now get dressed, we're going to temple. Very confusing, very, very confusing. I went to a Jewish school for 4 years. And at that Jewish school, we were the poor kids. We were the charity case. It was a private school and I got to go there for free. And I don't know if anybody ever rubbed that in my face, but I felt awkward and I felt alone and I felt separated because of that. There were some teachers that they were violent. Private schools 35 years ago, 40 years ago, they were allowed to be a lot different than they are today in schools. And they were violent, and I just got resentments and anger against that community. I felt like when my dad left, we were kind of ostracized in that small Jewish community. Divorce wasn't acceptable the way that it is today. And I felt separate and alone from that community, and it didn't do anything for me. When you're telling me God's the answer, I can't go to the religion of my childhood, and I feel like I'm stuck. And I can't do a Christian faith. And you guys are well-behaved, most of you anyway. Some of you really are out of line. But most of you are well-behaved, and you don't try and push your brand of faith on anybody else, because that's really not cool in AA. It's really not cool. If God is, he may express himself in our group conscience. But when you say that, when you tell me I can make up my own version of God, I know who you mean. Who are you kidding? And you think my ancestors killed him, for crying out loud. I mean, it's just... How do you go to that guy for help, you know? Listen, I know my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather had something to do with something bad that happened to you, but could you help me anyway, right? I just can't. I can't do it. I can't feel it. It seems hokey to me. It seems like it's a fantasy, like it's a story. I mean, boy, you know, the first thing I ever learned about God, it seemed to me, was the story didn't change much. When I was a kid, they told me about some guy that wore a red coat with a white beard, and if you did nice stuff once a year, he'd give you good things, and if you did bad stuff, he'd give you nothing. And then we graduated to the real story, which is if you do nice things, he'll give you everything, and if you do bad things, he'll burn you for eternity, right? And I just can't dig it, man. I just can't. If that's the answer, I feel like I'm blocked. I can't do nothing. Besides, I've tried God. I really feel like I've tried God. Here's what I've tried. There was this girl. The story of my life. There was this girl. Well, this girl's name was Trish. I called her Trish the Dish. She was a very cute little blonde girl. And Trish, I imagined, was my future. And the only way I was going to get to participate in my future was she was a church girl and I had to go to church with her. And, you know, to be honest, she had what I wanted and I was willing to go to any lengths to get it. So I went with Trish to church and we were at church and this preacher was an amazing man, right? This guy was amazing. He was very charismatic and he caught my attention. And we're at church and he got... See, something magic happened for me in that service. And he asked, he did an altar call. He asked if you want to be prayed over by the whole congregation. And the four or five of us went to the front. And this, I'm getting moved by this guy. And I'm, oh, man, I found something here. And then he says, I'll tell you, why don't we do this? He singled me out. He said, let's go back in the back of the church and let's talk a little bit. And I'm really kind of feeling something here, right? And we get back in this room, and this guy, he says to me, and I want you to know I am not goofing on him, because he had something that I've been searching for my entire sobriety, that I've had glimpses of, but he had it for real. He was plugged in, turned on, lit up. There was something about him magical. But he said in his faith what they did was to invoke the Holy Spirit as they talked in tongues. And I'm ready for anything. I don't know what this is going to be, but he says, let's do this. And he looks at me, and he starts this thing that to me sounds like gibberish. And I'm freaked out, right? And then he says, you try it. Well, I don't want to look stupid, so I stop making silly noises too, right? And there's two grown men making silly noises, and he's feeling something, and I'm feeling nothing. And I leave there thinking, this is just nuts, right? And then there's this other time, this guy, Tom. Tom worked with me at a car dealership I worked at. And he was an AA member, but he was also a devout Christian. He'd given me big books from time to time and 12 and 12s. Well, this one time, he says, you know, I wanted you to try something else. I'm going to give you this sinner's prayer. And if you'll say this when you really mean it, now you have to really mean it. If you'll say this when you really mean it, God will enter your heart and soul and you'll be fine. You'll be fine. He gives me this prayer. I take it home. I stick it up on his shelf. It means nothing to me. But within a couple of weeks, I'm in the shower, and I'm having one of those snot bubble moments. You know, I'm just going to die, and I hate my life, and I can't quit drinking. I'm weeping. And I say, the sinner's prayer, right? So I go, I get out of the shower, I put a towel on the bathroom floor, and I grab this sinner's prayer. Now, if you're picturing this, I want you to picture me clothed. I was naked, but it's a much better picture clothed, trust me, right? I grab this sinner's prayer, and I start to pray this prayer, and I pray this prayer, and I really mean it. And I get done, and I don't know what I was expecting. I don't know if I was expecting this bright light like Wilson talks about in his story, if I was expecting angels playing harps, or I don't know what I was expecting, but I get done, and it's nothing. That was a waste of time. So I get here and you tell me that I need to find God, and I think I've searched for God. I think I've tried. And I'm taking it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and We Agnostics, where it says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. And I knew that was true. I didn't have the power to quit. I couldn't quit. But I get with my sponsor, and we do step one, and he says, okay, well, we're done with step one. Let's go on with the rest of the steps. And I tell him, well, I can't. I can't do step two. I can't do step two, and I can't do step three. Can't do them. Can't do step two. Can't do step three. Can't do them. Can't do them. Won't do them. Can't do them. Not doing them. Can't do them. He says, why? I say, because I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God. How can I do step two if I don't believe in God? How can I do step three? How can I become willing to believe that something more powerful than God if I don't believe in God? And how can I turn my will and my life over to the care of something if I don't believe in God? I don't believe in God. He says, you don't believe in God. I said, no, I don't believe in God. He goes, okay, you don't have to believe in God. I go, what are you talking about? He said, I want you to do something for me. I want you to go out to the home group, find the people you respect, the people who seem like they're doing this thing in a way you'd like to do it, getting the effect you'd like to get, and ask them why they're sober. Well, I know why they're sober. It could be it's almost like they write it on the back of a business card and hand it out. If anybody ever asks you why you're sober, say this, right? Why are you sober? I'm sober today by the grace of a powerful God that I found in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that allows me to stay sober one day at a time. I'd like to thank God for AA, and I'd like to thank AA for God, you know. And I don't mean to goof on that, because if you ask me why I'm sober, I'll tell you why I'm sober. I'm sober because of the grace of a loving God that I found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? And if I ever do get to meet the big guy, I will say, Pops, great ride, loved the planet, the whole deal was cool, that AA thing. That was special to me. I'd like to. Dig it. Dig the whole AA thing. It was good. It was good. So then he says to me, well, let me ask you a question, Sheldon. If you found God in step two, or if you really turned your will over to him in step three, why would you do step four? I mean, if God's the answer and you found God in two or three, why would you do four? Four sucks. Really, it does. If your four step didn't suck, you did it wrong. Five is humiliating and embarrassing. Six and seven, nobody understands six and seven. Eight and nine are expensive. 10 and 11 are so confusing that half the people in this room think they're doing 10 when they're really doing 11. And who's got time for 12? Right? Who's got time for that? I got a job now and a wife and a kid and a career and Seinfeld's on. I mean, who's got time for that, right? Why would I do any of that if I could find God in two or three? The big book says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I have this awakening as a result of the steps. So what does step two mean? What does it mean for me to do step two? What do I ask of my guys when they do step two? In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, great place to look, on page 47, it asks a question, the question of step two. It says, do I now believe? Which I didn't. I did not believe. Do I now believe? No, no, I don't believe. I do not believe in God. I don't believe in God. No, no, I don't believe. You don't believe in God? No, I don't believe in God. You sure? You don't believe in God? I don't believe in God. I do not believe in God. The question is, do I now believe? And the answer is no. He said, okay, it's a comma, not a period. Can we read the rest of the sentence? Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Do I now believe, or I'm even willing to believe, there is a power greater than myself? What does that mean? Am I willing to believe that maybe, just maybe, perhaps, possibly, there might be a God? I mean, it's unlikely, right? The whole thing's kind of hokey. It's a little bit ridiculous. But am I willing to believe that maybe there might be, it's possible that there could be a God? Maybe. I doubt it. I mean, seriously, if you put me on a lie detector test or a gun to my head and push me and say, do you believe? I don't believe. But is it possible that maybe there might be a God? As unlikely as it seems at this point. And what's a guy like me to say to that? I mean, how stubborn and locked up and stupid do I have to be able not be able to answer the question of, look, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God. It's not my experience. I do not believe in God. But I am willing to say that maybe there might be one. I suppose it's possible. It's unlikely, and I don't think so. But it is possible that maybe there might be a God. Maybe. Maybe. No. Yes. maybe. And the big book says this. It says, as soon as a man can say that he does believe, which I did not, as soon as he says a man does believe, or he is willing to believe, which I was willing to believe, we emphatically ensure him he's on his way. What does that mean? Emphatically, like, yeah, baby, you're done. In the bag. Step two, over with. So if you're new and you're struggling with step two, well, we just did it together. It's over. The question of step two is simply this. Am I willing to say that it is possible that there might be a God and I'm willing to go look for him? Now, what did that mean practically in my life? There's a great line in AA Comes of Age. It's a talk written by Sam Shoemaker, one of the great friends of early AA. And Shoemaker says that Alcoholics Anonymous is the scientific approach to spirituality. What does that mean? What was the action of the scientific approach to AA? What did I have to do? What action did I have to become willing to take for step two to become real in my life? And my sponsor explained it to me this way. He said that when a scientist wants to test something, he uses what's called the scientific method. Now, I am a used car salesman, which means you are here listening to spiritual pontifications of a used car salesman. So you should really check your mental and emotional status and just ask yourself. But anyway, right, I'm not a scientist. Maybe you're a scientist, right? But my understanding of the scientific method is this. If I want to prove from a scientific standpoint if something exists or not, what I do is I set up an experiment where I create the set of circumstances where if what I believe will happen. I set up a set of circumstances where I say, I believe if this and this and this, this will happen. And I set that up, and then without judgment, I watch the experiment unfold. And at the end of the experiment, either it was yes or no. And if it's yes, I had no dog in the fight. I go, okay, great, we proved the experiment true. And if the answer is no, I go, okay, great, we proved the experiment is false, and we move on to the next thesis. And this is what he told me to do with my life. He said, I want you to pretend that God exists. That's all I want you to do. I want you to live your life as if you believed in God. What does that mean? Well, if you're going to act as if a guy that believes in God in your work life, Sheldon, what would that look like? What would a guy do that had spiritual principles when he went to work? And what would that look like? Well, I suppose I'd get there on time. Yeah, maybe even a little early. Yeah, maybe. Maybe while I was there, I would do my job most of the time. Maybe I wouldn't steal nothing. Maybe I wouldn't tell my boss what an idiot he is. Maybe I'd stay all day. And maybe I wouldn't cause problems. Maybe that's what it would look like for me to have spiritual principles and act like God in my life, in my job. And so that's what I did. Now, it did not make me believe in God right away. It did get me a promotion, which was magical to me, right? What would it look like in my relationship if I acted like a guy that believed and trusted in God, that had spiritual principles in his relationships? What would that look like? Well, it would look like I would be a man of honesty and integrity. It would look like a man that treated my girlfriend at the time with respect. It looked like a guy that did what he said he was going to do when he said he was going to do it. And I did that stuff. And it didn't mean that I immediately believed in God. But I did end up getting married to that girl, and we're still married today. That is, we'll be 20 years in October. It did mean that. What would it look like if I treated my parents and my friends and my AA group and all the activities in my life the way that a guy believed in God would act? What would that look like? And to live your life that way. And then he said, and periodically what we're going to do is we're going to check in on your life. Let's give it 6 months, and we'll see if your life gets better or not. And if it does, then we're proving, the scientific experiment is proving that maybe God exists. And if it doesn't, then maybe we're proving that he doesn't. But let's live our life as if God exists and see what happens and watch the results. And that's what I did. I tell you, This is not true for a lot of people, but it is true for some. Some people have shared my experience. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 4 or 5 years before I could honestly tell you that I believed in God. Now, I had been active in the steps for all of that time. I had done fourth step, fifth step. I was doing my best at 6 and 7. I was paying amends and doing 8 and 9. I was doing inventory, and I was doing prayer and meditation. I was doing 11, and I was doing 12-step work. I was an active member of AA at 4 or 5 years sober. And, of course, if you asked me in the meetings if I believed in God, of course I would lie to you and say that I did. But I'm not really sure that I did. But I will never forget driving up to my sponsor's house at about 4 or 5 years of sobriety, as I had done every Tuesday night for my entire sobriety, going to a book study that he has at his house. And I started to cry. And this wasn't tears of pain, this was tears of joy, tears of relief. And I get to his house and he says, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Nothing. Nothing's wrong. Why are you crying? I don't know." "You know what it is?" "What?" "It's real. I'm not," when we, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we use this phrase, we say, act as if. Act as if. And we don't mean act as if everything's okay, we mean act as if God's got your back. And at 4 or 5 years of sobriety, I realized I wasn't acting anymore. That something had happened inside of me that had moved me where I believed that God was real. The reason I tell you this story is because if you're like me, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous in my first couple of years of sobriety, I think there's something wrong with me because I'm not lit up on the God train. I'm not connected and on fire the way that people that have got 30, 60, 90 days seem to be. They did step two, they did the third step prayer, and all of a sudden, man, me and the big guy are woo, woo, right? And I didn't feel that way because not everybody's experience is like that. In the spiritual experience, it talks about how sometimes people's experience is this miraculous overwhelm, and that's a real experience, and it's their experience, but some of us have this educational experience, this slower experience. One is not more powerful or real than the other. They're both as amazingly truthful, but my experience was a slower experience. I will tell you this, if I had waited till I was 4 or 5 years sober to do a third step prayer because I hadn't finished my second step, to write an inventory because I hadn't done my third step prayer, to share the inventory because I hadn't written the inventory, to attempt to do 6 and 7 because I hadn't shared the inventory, to make any amends because I wasn't doing 6 and 7, and to continually inventory my life and to look for God in 11. If I had waited to feel God in my soul before I did those things, I would have died drunk. I have no way of proving it, but I believe it's true with everything in me. And so step two for me is this simple idea where really what I'm saying is, I'm not sure if God's there or not, but I'm going to go look for him. I'm going to go look for him. And he will reveal himself to me or he won't. I will find him or I won't. But I am going to become willing to start to look. And that is the sum total of my second step experience. Doc.